Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Sheila Carapico, who's a professor of political science and international studies at the University of Richmond, where she researches the political economy of development with special emphasis on Arab countries. Until recently, she was the head of the political science department at the American University, Cairo, and her most recent book is Political Aid, Democracy Promotion, and the Paradoxes of Empowerment. She's also a contributing editor to Middle East Report. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sheila Carapico.
Good evening. Nice to talk to you again.
And Sheila, the demonstrations in Tahrir Square, of course, are echoes of the original demonstrations in the Arab Spring. And in many of the protesters now are saying that they quit the Arab Spring process too soon and handed the revolution to the military, who have clearly shown an unwillingness to hand over control. Do you think that there's some buyer's remorse there?
Well, I mean, I thought at the time, and May, in fact, have said to you when we spoke last spring, said of all the slogans of the protest movement in Egypt, the one that struck me most uncomfortably was the one that said the people and the army are one hand. I think now, the masses of protesters, the multitudes, if you will, have come to that same conclusion that it was a bit facile to think that the military and the masses, have one set of interest and concerns. And what's interesting, though, is that, I mean, this seems to, the sentiment that we're tired of how the military have tried to kind of co-opt the revolution, it transcends the otherwise divide between the Islamist or the Brotherhood factions, the religious and social conservatives on the one hand, and the so-called youth, relatively progressive / liberal demonstrators on the other. So it's an important moment.
Well, I was trying to get through to Rabab El-Mahdi, a colleague of yours, and she was in Tahrir Square, and she couldn't hear me because of the extraordinary amount of noise going on from gunfire and protesting. And as you know, the audience who don't know Rabab, she's a liberal leftist feminist Egyptian woman, but she's out there demonstrating with the Brotherhood. So give us a sense of what the political makeup of this is, because most of the press have referred to this as an uprising or a demonstration by the Brotherhood.
Well, I mean, I think that's clearly not, well, it's part of the story, but it's not the whole story. So, my colleague Rabab El-Mahdi and lots of other colleagues that she is, among others, on the faculty at the American University in Cairo, and then you have faculty of Cairo University and, the considerable cadre of kind of progressive intellectuals in Cairo who were part of an integral part of the protest movement last January and February that brought down the person of Hosni Mubarak. And, at the time, the Islamists seemed to be part of the movement and yet not too kind of conspicuous among them. And then over the course of the summer, we seemed to see a surge of not only Muslim Brotherhood, but more extreme right-wing Salafi elements. And as the scheduled elections came closer, it seemed as if those two factions, if you will, the liberals and secular and progressive group on the one hand, and the Brotherhood and the religious conservatives and so forth on the other, they seemed to be squaring off even a week or two ago. That was how we were seeing things going. And now we see that those two ideologically very divergent groups are nonetheless coming together to express their frustration with the continuing grip of the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces over politics, and perhaps particularly the kind of strange way that they've designed the elections. So there's this, a lot of discontent with the military.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Sheila Karapika, who was until recently the head of the Political Science Department at the American University in Cairo. Now, the Egyptian cabinet offered to resign today, and clearly they're kind of a fig leaf for the military government of the Marshal Tantawi, who apparently the chant in Tahrir Square is the people want the removal of the Marshal. If this resignation of this fig leaf cabinet takes place, wouldn't that expose the military to direct rule? I mean, it feels like not only have they been intransigent, they've been incompetent as well.
Well, indeed they have. I mean, again, things like the design of the election. I mean, no one expects a military in any country in the world to be able to design an electoral system, and yet they've taken it upon themselves to do so well beyond their competence. So this is, I think, actually a kind of proximate cause of the upsurge in frustration and therefore the extensive demonstrations that we've seen in the past week. At the same time,
well, the military. I mean, just specifically, what's irritating the public and is showing the both the out of touch nature of the military and their kind of being drunk with power and not wanting to give it up. The military council apparently have produced a draft document setting out principles for a new constitution under which the military and its budget would be exempted from civilian oversight. And furthermore, the military have proposed to delay the presidential elections until late 2012 or early 2013. So there you have it.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, it's difficult to imagine that the military having always had an incredible amount of power and now having pretty much concentrated all power in the hands of, a small supreme armed forces council would be willing to relinquish it. And then you have the resignation, as you said before, of the civilian government, which has been serving at the sufferance of the field marshal and other officers. And you wonder, have these civilian government officials resigned? Well, they've done it before, and it's not been accepted. So on the one hand, it could be, as you say, a fig leaf. On the other hand, it could be a sign that they actually don't have faith in the generals to run the country anyway, either. And so, I think there's a widespread sense, and it's pretty obvious, that they're not competent to make the kinds of decisions that they're making.
Well, Sheila Karapika, Mohammed al-Baradei, who, of course, leads one of the coalition political groups, and albeit a smaller one than the Brotherhood, much smaller, but he's saying that the military council are leading a counter-revolution. Where would the leverage be on the military to get them to realize they're out of their depth, they've had their moment, and they got to get out of the way to let Egypt move forward? One thing comes to mind is the fact that the United States taxpayer subsidizes the Egyptian military to the tune of a couple of billion a year.
Well, precisely, and it is difficult to imagine, given that level of subsidy from the United States taxpayer, that anybody else, even the whole of the Egyptian public, could really bring leverage on the commanders of the armed forces to even ease up a little bit on their centralization of power, much less to relinquish it. By the same token, I must say that, one of the things that strikes me as curious is that the United States, for all its support for the Egyptian military and, training of officers and training and equipment that we provide and so forth and so on, I mean, I think we missed an opportunity to provide them with a little bit of sort of constitutional principles 101. Here's how to organize an election 102. I mean, if they're going to be making decisions about elections and constitutions, then it's too bad nobody gave them any advice on how to do that properly.
So, Sheila Karapinka, do you have any idea of what the White House is telling the Egyptian junta?
You know, I wish I did, and I wish that any of us had seen any, you know, indication of an American policy in that regard. I don't know who, I mean, we haven't heard anything from whoever it would be, some expert, you know, in the State Department or in the Defense Department who might have been providing this kind of advice. I mean, unfortunately, I don't think that, you know, our government, well, I mean, clearly we weren't prepared for these events, and I'm not sure you can criticize anyone for that, really. But on the other hand, I don't think that we have organized our relationship with the military and civilian elements of the Egyptian establishment in a way to provide constructive and useful advice either to the military themselves or to the civilian opposition.
So would the explanation be, I mean, we're more or less agreeing that the United States is probably the only place where there's any leverage on these generals. They clearly don't care about public opinion, and they're cracking heads and being quite brutal at the moment. Is it because the United States is simply too distracted and its Middle East portfolio is consumed by getting out of Iraq, trying to get out of Afghanistan, dealing with Libya, and dealing with Syria?
Well, I do think we've got kind of a thin expertise at the very top on dealing with these different issues in different Middle Eastern countries. So again, I'm not sure. We have some competent people, I mean, in Washington talking about these things, but it's not clear how advice filters up and then back down again the chain of command. So, you know, I don't want to hold the United States responsible for these very complicated things that are going on in Egypt. And, by the way, I'm not sure we can be completely confident that the military doesn't have to pay any attention to Egyptian public opinion, because it's pretty vociferous and widespread. But by the same token, I mean, I do think that we need to be aware that our government might have been in a position to provide more constructive input to the military commanders in charge in Egypt right now, and somehow failed to do so.
Well, I'm not sure of who on the National Security Council would be handling this,
Exactly.
And the same with in the Defense Department. I know the people that are handling Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, etc. But it's a little troubling, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I mean, if you look again at, you know, if you look at Egypt, I mean, it's hitting the fan, so to speak, right now. But I think we have, you know, similar issues in Yemen and in Syria, where we've brought in kind of counterterrorism experts and placed a lot of emphasis on that level of expertise. But when it comes to kind of country-specific and quite vital interests in places, notably Egypt, we don't seem to have someone, or better a kind of committee or a cadre of people who are able to respond quickly and provide advice. And again, you know, I mean, responding quickly is one thing, but it's been obvious for, I don't know, 6 or 8 months now that Egypt needed a little bit of help figuring out how to have a proper electoral system. And yet, whatever advice we were giving was to, I don't know, NGOs, non-governmental organizations of relatively little influence, without recognizing that those decisions are being made by military officers whose training isn't anything other than electoral systems. I mean, they've put forth an electoral system. I have a PhD in political science. I don't understand the system.
Well,
how can an Egyptian citizen understand it?
Well, Sheila Karapiko, I thank you for joining us, and we're both sort of scratching our heads here, but I appreciate your input here.
Great talking to you. Thanks.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Sheila Karapiko, Professor of Political Science and International Studies at the University of Richmond, where she researches the political economy of development with special emphasis on Arab countries. Until recently, she was the head of the Political Science Department at the American University, Cairo, and her most recent book is Political Aid, Democracy Promotion, and the Paradoxes of Empowerment. She's also a contributing editor to Middle East Report. So what do we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we began with Tom Ferguson talking about the super committee being struck with kryptonite and absolutely failing. No big surprise. What is pretty disgraceful is, of course, is that the trigger that the failure is supposed to bring about probably won't be pulled because they'll weasel their way out of it. They've got a whole year to do so. It is extraordinary to think that the deal broke down because the Republicans not only refused to give up or budge on the Bush tax cuts and agree to a modest increase from 35% to 39% for the richest Americans, they actually wanted to cut taxes for the 1% even further. Perhaps, you know, Obama can have some traction and the Democrats can have some traction with that in 2012. But their performance has been so pathetic. You know, you just wonder how much this government is completely bought and sold by the powerful interests who clearly, if they're going to draw a line in the sand for the 1%, that ought to tell you who really runs the country. Then I talked with a veteran Spanish reporter, Antonio Caño from El País, about the conservative victory in Spain. He really gave a portrait of the absolute helplessness of European leaders and voters in the sense that their fates are not in their hands. They're in the hands of the European bankers and the central bank and Merkel in Germany and Sarkozy in France. And it was extraordinary to get this sense of helplessness. Finally, we spoke with Sheila Karapiko, former chair of the political science department at Cairo University. And we were kind of totally puzzled about how these incompetent generals have stayed in power for so long. They clearly don't know how to write a constitution, etc. And the people in that brought about these Arab Spring revolutions are now saying, why the hell did we allow the military to walk away with all the spoils? The question I asked was, who on our side is pressuring them? And the answer is, we don't even know who in the American government is telling these generals to get out of Dodge. I'm Ian Masters. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasts, and you can sign up there at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Time was